Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Just on a serious note, before we have some fun and goof off, as I mentioned to you earlier in the show, Ja Morant had a bunch of Instagram posts that caught everybody's attention, and not in a good way. And that's been obviously part of the issue with him of late. But this one was a little more concerning because, as you know, he was reprimanded once again, flashing a gun on an IG on a live that he was doing with friends in a car, singing along to a song. And, his team has reprimanded him, the league now looking into it. There's people calling for him to be suspended for up to an entire season for just not getting it. And this report from ESPN, or actually from TMZ, is that Shelby County Sheriff's Office says that Ja Morant is fine after a welfare check following cryptic social media posts. Now, the posts, and I asked this question, is how would you react if this was a friend of yours and you knew your friend had been in some, been in some trouble? And so it starts with this. A post of him with his, actually a post of his sister. And his sister is just committed to play college basketball. So he sent her a congratulations. Then there was another post of him with his mother watching him working out before a game. And he just said, I love you, Mom. Then he did a picture of him and his dad hugging on the court. Again, another heart, love you, Dad. Picture of his daughter with him on the court. And, talked about how she's the best. And then the very last picture in this series of stories is just a picture of him being interviewed and a photo of him on the court after a game being interviewed. And all it says is bye, B-Y-E, like goodbye. And that was it. And so that just got a lot of people in the basketball world worried. Like, is he all right? Is this a cry for help? Is this calling out? Like, what's going on here? And that's why I ask you again, what would you do if that was a friend of yours and there was similar stuff going on in their lives and you saw a post like that? You'd probably say the same thing, like, whoa, is he good? But a welfare check, according to the sheriff's office down there, said that he is fine. So we'll see if there is more to this story. All right, we're going to get Brendan Brown in here. We're going to talk some hoops with him momentarily. But as you know, it is the Power Hour. So we're going to give you a couple people an opportunity to be part of it. So as you know, this is how it goes. I say it's hour number three. It's Bart and Han. What's that mean? So Derek and Hoboken, are you ready? It is hour number three. It's Bart and Han. What's that mean?
It's the Power Hour.
Oh, don't hurt yourself, Derek. Well done. Okay. Really, really put in an effort all the way through. Powered through to the end. That's what the Power Hour is all about. All right, one more. Frank in Patterson. It's hour number three. It's Bart and Han. What's that mean?
It's the Power
Hour. Love it. Thank you, Frank. Well done. Quality of the calls on this one. Again, the audio quality is always really the most important part. But still, Bart will be back tomorrow. We'll get to hear Bart doing it in the only way that Bart can do it, which is the say it with your chest kind of thing. But these last couple of days has been fun, and I appreciate everybody's participation in this whole thing. Do we have Brendan? Is B there with us?
Brendan is ready to go.
Perfect. Okay. So a person who I love to talk hoops with, a voice you have heard all over the place. You've heard him calling Knicks games. You've heard him calling other games. You've heard him around. And it's just a guy that has so much basketball knowledge from basketball royalty, of course, and that is Brendan Brown. Brendan, how are we doing?
Alan, you're doing all this stuff about Sinatra today, and mm-hmm. If you go over into Hoboken, a place called Piccolo's,
yeah,
they serve cheesesteaks, and you can get some hidden secrets about Frank Sinatra there. Some stuff like you were talking about earlier in the show, stuff you might not realize, a little bit different from what you're thinking, but I know you don't get to Jersey much, but that's where you want to go to get some Sinatra info.
Well, if I have to go to the beach bash at the end of June, I'll have to go to Jersey. And in doing so, I might have to find my way over to a place like that. But I'd need you to take me. Like, you got to bring me to a place like this. Like, that's, I need to see that.
No, yeah. Piccolo's is big time. And, you know, considering Jets, Giants this fall, you're not all that far away when you go to MetLife.
Yeah. I mean, have you heard that same thing about how he really didn't like New York, New York?
Yes, and there are many other intricacies about him. And then once he was established at some point, then he didn't want to go back to Hoboken. There's a lot of different stories about him, but you have to delve in there and find an old timer who will, you know, give you some secrets.
I love it. All right, well, give me some secrets about what you saw last night, because I had Greeny fighting this morning that he was adamant. On Get Up, that somebody's going to have to come back from an 0-3 deficit in the NBA at some point. And if anybody's going to do it, it's this Celtics team. When you were watching the game last night with your trained eye, a guy who has coached in the NBA, you have seen it all. You've scouted, you've coached, you know the game. Was there something you saw that said they could win the series?
I think when you're watching the game last night and you get to halftime, you're saying to yourself, if you're a Celtic fan or, you know, whatever the case may be, how do you find a group of guys out of the nine that they play? Where are the five guys going to be a group to take on Miami on their own court in terms of physicality, rebounding, defending, et cetera? And I thought that Grant Williams and Rob Williams in the first half were two of the guys who would be in that group. But it turns out that the starting lineup does it in that third quarter when they're down 9, 61-52. Yeah. They make the 18-0 run. It flipped the switch. It was the first time you see really all series long where Boston's defense creates turnovers. Miami, they have five in the quarter. Now you got Jaylen Brown running down your neck. Now, even when they make a basket, Miami, Butler gets 15 of his, you know, the 23 in the quarter. They're running down your throat after a made basket, much like Sacramento does, like with De'Aaron Fox. And by pushing so hard, even after a make, now Miami's back on their heels. They're not matching up. You're playing in the flow. And the Celtics are getting great looks at three. And I thought the three-point shots that they shot in the first half were okay, but they took a lot of bad threes. It all opened up in that third quarter by ramming it down their throats, pass, 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 and it's a wide-open three-pointer, and they make seven in the third. And so it's the first time in that section of play, and then they're able to carry it over, you know, in parts of that fourth quarter, where they had their three-point game going, because the pace they pushed at, it was hard for Miami to get matched up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fast break points, too. I mean, the 18 fast break points, 27 points off turnovers, which, you know, again, that's how you can you know, you don't let Miami's defense get set. How do you do it? You get a turnover, and you run right down the floor, and you don't let them get set. It just felt like the formula was there. But you know what else, too? I mean, look, we saw this in the Knicks series. We see this in the playoffs. Is when one team makes threes and the other team doesn't, guess which team wins? Like, that's just like in the last night, it was 40% from three for the Celtics, and the Heat couldn't make a three. The Heat have been shooting out of their minds from three, it seems like, in the playoffs, especially against the Bucks. And in this series, they were shooting a high percentage. It just feels like that's got to catch up to them, because that's not really, they're not made up of that kind of players. So you're just waiting for that. When is it going to flip?
Like last night, you know, like you say, you're a plus 30 in points.
Big.
At the three-point line. You're going to win that game like 95 times out of 100 when you have that much of an advantage.
Yeah.
The Miami bench has been sensational throughout the playoffs. Milwaukee, Knicks, you know, this series. Last night they had 8 turnovers out of the 15. Lowry had 4. Robinson had 2. Martin had 2. So when they were trying to make different types of moves during the game, especially in the second half, they were turning the ball over, and that just galvanized Boston for the very first time in this series to play at 94 feet and score that way. So, you know, it comes down to this. I read this somewhere this morning. Boston is 51-12 this season when they make 15 threes. So they're going to win over 80% of the time if they can make 15 threes. Now, they did it last night. They made 18. Can you make 15 threes in a game five, a game six, a game seven? It's kind of hard to do that if Miami knows where you are and they have a good chance to contest your threes, even when you're playing at home. But I guess, you know, the second half for most of it is a snapshot as to how they can play with pace and get better threes than contested threes. You know, you keep making 15 a game, you got a chance.
Talking with Brendan Brown. Brendan, again, you coached for many years in the NBA, so you understand not just play calling and you know, the game flow and everything else, but you also understand relationships and how they work and how some players work together and some players don't. The Celtics, again, last night notwithstanding, another conversation about Boston, which, again, if you're in New York, I've told everybody, Knicks fans, Nets fans, pay attention to what's happening in Philadelphia. Pay attention to what's happening in Boston. Toronto's already looking for a coach, so who knows what's going on there. But Philadelphia, they were considered ahead of you. But right now, James Harden could leave. They don't have Doc. They're getting a new coach. Embiid, you know, question marks. Like, can they ever win a championship? So things could be breaking down there. Who knows? Like, one bad decision, and suddenly they're a worse team than they were this year. Boston, the narrative before they won last night was maybe Tatum and Brown don't work together, that they need to trade Jaylen Brown before he has a chance to walk. That's something that Kendrick Perkins actually said about they should trade him for Damian Lillard. But forget all that. I'm just asking you, as somebody that understands how this stuff works and understands how you have star players, you got to make them work. Do you look at Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and think it's probably time they break that up?
I guess the way to answer that is, let's look at who's left. Who's left in the playoffs? Okay, Denver's left. You have a relationship between the coach Michael Malone and Jokic that goes back many seasons. Okay, it's a marriage of understanding. Yeah, Jokic is one of the best players in the league, but am I using him the right way? Am I using him correctly? And I would think, because of the continuity between Malone and Jokic and then figuring out how to fill in around them, that relationship is incredible. You look at Miami, Butler with Spoelstra. You know, the different isolations, the way that they do it, the different pick and rolls, the way that they do it with Butler. It seems to make everyone around them incredibly efficient as role players. So you have a great marriage between Spoelstra and Butler. Can you say that about Boston? You have a first-year coach in Missoula. Okay, your question is, do these two guys fit together?
Mm-hmm.
The financial aspects of what they both could get paid is, like, ridiculous.
It's $600 million combined for the two, yeah.
Yeah, it's 50 and 60. I mean,
yeah.
Talking about blowing apart your cap or going into a tax apron or whatever you think. Do they both fit on the same team? I don't know. Like, I can see where you could make a case either way on that and then try to build a team around the two. You know, one of them, whoever you select, which probably would be Tatum, and move forward that way, one, for financial reasons, but two, what are you getting from Jaylen Brown when he's got to be a half-court player, a half-court efficient player, a half-court guy who can get doubled? He doesn't have a great handle in traffic at times. Is he making the right passes? Remember, a couple of years ago, this was the knock on Tatum, and Tatum got a lot better at taking on doubles, figuring out when to shoot, when to pass, get rid of it quickly, et cetera. Well, I think you have the same problem with Brown in the half court. He's a tremendous transition player. But to think that Missoula has a great relationship with either one of those guys, and we're in winning time now, I'm not sure that's the case. So, you know, those are the teams that are left. And everyone thinks it's easy to coach the best players in the league. There have been many, many, many examples over the years of teams that had tremendous talent that didn't win. Think of Portland in the late 90s. They were stacked.
Yes.
Like 12 guys on the team that were great players.
Yeah.
And they only made it to the finals, I believe, one time. So, you know, it just is what it is. It's not easy, but Denver has it, Miami has it, and it's very hard to find. Look at what happened in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, I always say it too, when you, because of their age, it's so hard in this league. Teams are always trying to find two stars. You have two stars. There's just, you got to figure out how you make it work. You know, the Knicks tried it years ago when they got Amari Stoudemire and then they got Carmelo Anthony. But while Amari, it was money that it cost them. With Melo, it was players. It was pieces. And they were just always chasing, building back the roster. All these years later, Carmelo Anthony is now announced his retirement from basketball. And you called many of his games. Can you just, like what was Carmelo Anthony? Not as a basketball. We know he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. We know what he's done in the league. He's a top 10 all-time scorer. Well, he won a national championship at Syracuse. You know, the Olympics and the gold medals, three gold medals that he has, Olympics, Melo, the record that he had with the three-pointers and all that stuff. But I'm talking about in just his years with the Knicks, and you know this franchise very well. You go way back with it, including with your dad. So what do you look at when you think of Carmelo Anthony as a Knick? What do you think of?
I think a lot of what we were just talking about. What was the relationship between Mike Woodson and Carmelo Anthony? And how was Carmelo used at different times in the second half of games, in the fourth quarter of games? Ironically, if you really follow Carmelo really super close, he wasn't the guy who made a lot of shots late in games for the Knicks when he was in many of those situations. But when you go to the 54-win team, he missed a lot of games, as did Chandler, as did Felton. J.R. Smith played all 82 and very much deserved to be the sixth man of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, but in that same vein, when Carmelo was then back and down the stretch and into the playoffs, you knew he was the number one guy. You knew he was the leading scorer in the league. And ironically, Alan, if you really think about this, I feel the next year when the roster wasn't as good and there was probably more of a usage rate placed upon him, that was his best year as a Knick. Not only did Mike Woodson funnel the ball through him all the time, he had to accept doubles, make the hockey pass, get it out, get it to the weak side, whatever. He scored that year. He rebounded that year. He was a willing passer. He did everything that you could think of, but the team just wasn't as good. They didn't make the playoffs. They missed it by a year. But as an individual player and as a selfless player, he was so good that year, probably better than the 54-win year. So, you know, in his tenure, did he win enough? No, he didn't win enough as a Knick, if you're looking at Knick standards. But if you got to know him at all, he was a really good dude and someone that you could have a conversation with. He loved to talk basketball and different misgivings that you might have about him as a selfish player and stuff like that off the court. I found him to be a very engaging personality and I enjoyed the times that I had the ability to talk to him.
Now, all these years later, do they have their best player since Carmelo in Jalen Brunson?
I mean, how do you judge it all? Like, this is New York.
Okay? Franchise.
You got to win the,
right? Like a guy you can depend on.
In New York.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Jalen Brunson's a heck of a player. He was terrific in the playoffs. His scoring ability in the Miami series. What the starting group did in terms of scoring, the bench, unfortunately, didn't really do much of anything in the Miami series. So, you know, Brunson's ability to score, to create a little bit for others, he's just been such a bright light coming here. And if you really want to be honest and look at how this season unfolded, everyone's like, well, how come he didn't make the All-Star team, or how come he didn't make All-Pro or everything else? Well, the first time around in the league, a lot of people look and say, you know, what kind of how's Brunson sitting in New York? And he wasn't that good, you know, early on or even to the halfway of the year. So the first time that Brunson was playing against a lot of other teams, other cities, how is Brunson fitting in New York? He was doing fine. But then the second half of the year on, he blows up. But a lot of people in their mental perception said, well, I saw Brunson. It was an off night for him the first time I saw him with New York. That's the nature of the beast. But what he did, you know, down into the playoffs, how reliable he is, how many good shots he takes, that's the biggest thing about him. Everything is a relatively good shot. And once he's made a couple and he can make those fadeaways around the lane, you know, he's just so good. But, you know, it's all going to come down to Allen, as you know, in New York, winning. Okay, Carmelo Anthony won in the first round, didn't really win enough. The Knicks, exciting this year, they win in the first round. You got to do more than that when you're being, you know, judged here in New York City, where everyone wants to win super big. But Brunson looks to be a very big piece to do that.
Do you think, and I'm talking with Brendan Brown, so looking at the Celtics, and, you know, they've showed a lot of warts, and you wonder about their coaching. Philadelphia, you know, kind of had to figure some stuff out as well. Miami is what they are, but the Knicks did go toe-to-toe with them, you'd say, in a six-game series that was, you know, a minute or two away from getting to a seventh game. What are the Knicks like, just where they are, they're fine. Do they need another piece? Like, what would you, when you look at them, assess them, what does this offseason need to bring in order for the Knicks to take a step from this season to next year?
Well, I think it's a really big decision that you have to make, and then how you conduct talking to other teams. Who would you put out there? Would you put big contracts out there at the top of the roster and say, hey, we're going to shake it up really big by moving one of the big contracts? Will anyone take one of the big contracts? Do you need a team that, you know, is under the cap that would be willing to take a big contract? And then that gives you a little bit more financial flexibility. You could go the other way and say, okay, after 23 games, we think this team was really good the last 59. They were really good the last 25, 17-8 with Josh Hart. And you say, well, let's pay all of those guys a lot of money. Let's pay Hart. Let's pay quickly down the road. Let's pay Grimes. And you just go about it that way, and you invest in your own team. Now, when the Knicks did that two summers ago, that didn't work out. But this team is better than the team 2 years ago. But it's a real finite kind of a situation on how much money you have, being that the three top guys make about 75. The center position will cost you 23 next year. So you're near $100 million in five guys. And then what are the decisions that you're going to make? Now, looking at how the team is constructed and the management is constructed, I think they're very financially solvent. Brock Aller and, you know, his group of guys that work for him. I think that money will always be a little bit of a consideration when they're making the decisions. So in order to really shake the team up and you want to move player A or player B, one of those big contracts may have to go in some way, shape, or form. Even if it's a little bit of a step backwards to go forwards, you might have to do something like that.
It's gonna, yeah. I mean, that is a huge decision to make. It's gonna be a very interesting offseason. B, we got to leave it right there. Love talking hoop with you, my man. Thanks so much for joining us.
You got it, Alan. Thanks,
all
bro.
Right. Again, Brendan Brown, a voice that you certainly have heard many, many times, calls games, coached in the league for a number of years. You know the last name as well, Brown. Well known in the coaching circles. Of course, Hubie Brown, head coach of the Knicks at one point, And, of course, a great announcer himself as well for ESPN. All right, 800-919-3776. Your thoughts off this and whether or not can the Celtics be the first team to win a series after being down 0-3?
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
So you heard Brendan Brown tell me about the bar that he wants to take me to that's got all kinds of stories behind it. But I still find it amazing that he was discovered because he was a singing waiter. And it was called the Rustic Cabin in Englewood Cliffs in Jersey. Like, imagine that. You just happen to be a singing waiter. And you just, somebody heard you. It's turning into a legendary career like that. Imagine being somebody just like ordering dinner and this singing waiter comes over and he's like, can I just eat? I don't really need to hear all this. Can I just eat? But then you hear his voice and you're like, nah, you just keep going. 800-919-3776. Do you think the Celtics can come back in this series? Can they be the first team in the NBA to bounce back from an 0-3 deficit to win a best of seven series? Nobody's ever done it before. A handful of teams even forced a game seven. They were on the verge of getting swept last night. They are, on paper, the better team in this series. Greeny has been fighting all day, believing they can. And I watched last night, and it was the first instinct I had. I'm watching them like, well, if anybody's going to do it, I mean, if they got their heads right, they could do it. But can they? Javier in Queens. Javier.
Han Solo, what up?
What's up, man?
Chilling, man. I mean, I've seen enough Boston teams come back from 3-0 in my lifetime. So
I'm all set.
Hell no. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. It's not happening. And I think the beauty of it is not only is it not keep all of them like they did back in the day. They're going to get Grant Williams just like they got, what's his name? Ray Allen from Boston to go over to Miami.
I heard that rumor. You know, yeah.
Boston gets the gas face.
Oh, man. Okay, so we're going there with it. Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a New York fan, it's the last thing you want to see, right? It's like, oh, my God, they're going to do it again. Like, please. But that's what they were doing. For those who might not have known, I said this earlier in the show, if you're just joining us. So before the game last night, this is pregame. I think this was actually in the shoot-around yesterday morning. Marcus Smart, Marcus Smart, and Jaylen Brown both uttered the phrase, don't let us win one. Like the warning, don't let us win one. And that is echoing, of course, Kevin Millar, who back in 04 with the Sox, he said that. They were down 0-3. And remember, that game three, the Yankees spanked the Red Sox. Like, that series was over. Like, done. And his Millar just kind of said, you know, don't let us win one. And he said it because Pedro Martinez was up next. Like, they knew, you get us one, now we got Pedro on the mound. We can win that game. Now, all of a sudden, the series is starting to tilt. Curt Schilling. We can win that game. So that was the rally cry, and two Celtic players brought that up. And if you want to add to it, at the game last night in Miami, you know who was sitting courtside? Alex Rodriguez. Oh, and Derek Jeter was there too. So now you add that part to it, right? And now, do we see tomorrow night in Boston, Big Papi, Pedro, Mala, like, do they bring them out and have them sit in the building? Just to, you know, just to get that little bit of the luck of the Celtics, right? Like, just to get a little bit of that, like, reach back and see if they can steal another one. Can they get a little magic to happen? But is it coincidence or not that these guys are saying that, referencing the 0-4 comeback by the Celtics, by the Red Sox, and then at the game that night is two guys that were witness to the prosecution. Like, two guys that were there that were on the wrong side of the comeback in Miami for a home game for the Heat. Is it coincidence or not? It's like just all these little things that make it intriguing, that make you watch, make you wonder. Could that really happen? I don't want to believe it can, but because these guys started up with all that stuff, it's impossible to just let it go. Now, it could be over tomorrow, like, because that's this Boston team. That's what they are. They're maddening like that. They are the team that can play so good and then the next night look like crap. But when they're up against it, like we saw against Philly, I mean, in that Philly series against the Sixers, they were garbage in game five. They went down 3-2, had to go to Philly, and then dogfight, win a game six on the road, and then they win game seven. So can, you know, you're going home now. Can you play with your backs against the wall? Can you play your best and go, send the series back in a game six? Because as you know, you get this one. See, the pressure's still on Boston. They get this one. Game six now, the pressure's on who? Miami. Because they don't want to go back to Boston for a game seven. Right? So now the pressure tilts. And here's this Heat team that has not felt pressure yet in this playoffs. Not real pressure. They've been tested, but they've never felt pressure. Game six, suddenly they're feeling pressure. And you're talking about a team that has, yes, Jimmy Butler. And yes, it has Bam Adebayo. They have Kyle Lowry, who's won a championship. But the rest of that crew, like, you know, they don't really have studs, stars. They got to, yes, they got to a finals in the bubble a couple of years ago. I'm just saying, feel that pressure to win. This has been not easy, but they've had a wide road to get to where they are right now because the Bucks, Giannis got hurt. The Bucks are a little bit in turmoil. The Knicks were good but banged up and fought them, but it banged up. And then they're playing a Celtics team that is just mercurial. I mean, they are as Jekyll and Hyde as they come. So that's why you just watch and you're like, the Celtics get right. And I'm doing this for Peter Rosenberg. God bless you, kid. Believe in your team right now, Pete. Kyle in West Orange. Kyle.
Hey, Han Solo. What's up? First of all, Han, I've been listening to you. You guys do this. I love your show after the Knicks game. I love what you guys do.
Thank you.
So educational and informative. Now, what I want to say about this, if any team that can come back and beat this Heat team is this Boston Celtic team. They got the grit, they got the players, and they got the building. And if they get this one game, now they're going to feel good about themselves. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to cowboy up.
Oh.
Now the pressure's on them on the Heat. Remember that?
You went cowboy up now. If somebody says cowboy up. Oh, my God. Kyle?
And here it is. And I'm going to tell you something. That Yankee game, I loved my Yankees. But I said, okay, you got this. If you don't win this game four, there's a possibility the Red Sox will win game five because our arms weren't strong. I wasn't impressed by their pitching staff. They were old guys. The Yankees pitching staff. However, they surprised me in game five. But what did the Red Sox do? They cowboy up and they came after them and they got Mariano. That's how they win. Miami's got to close it. They got to end this in Boston.
Yeah, or don't mess around.
Or else they'll be sitting right. Because listen, I've been watching this stuff. And I'm going to tell you, all of my buddies have been watching the NBA. It's been so exciting. But when the Knicks lost, the Knicks were also missing shots.
Yep.
We were missing shots.
Open shots.
And this, open shots.
Yep.
And the Celtics were doing the same.
Yes.
So
exactly
if this team, if they don't do that, hon, I kind of want Miami. I don't mind if Miami gets in there. Fine. I'll
Denver's
root for
winning
them
no matter
or do whatever.
What. I'm telling you, Kyle. Winning it. Nah, Denver's winning it no matter what. I'm putting it right down now. Nuggets are winning
it. And they're
the
winning it. And that's the 20. That should have been the 2023 MVP. I'm sorry. This guy Joe is amazing.
Yeah.
And again, Philadelphia missed shots.
Yep.
They missed shots. And,
it's going to be about that.
Real
Kyle.
Quick.
Go ahead. Real quick.
You go ahead. Real quick. Knicks to Knicks. I want the Knicks to go out and get that guy. I think his name is Mobley out of Cleveland. He's a power
Evan
forward.
Mobley,
doesn't he score 20?
Yeah,
he's a free agent this year.
Well, he's not going to be a free. No. You're not talking about Evan Mobley is on a rookie deal, Kyle. Like, he's not going anywhere. Yeah, he's not going anywhere. But the Cowboy Up thing, oh my God! If Marcus Smart starts doing the Cowboy Up tomorrow, then we have definitely jumped the shark.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Like, this is literally like the opening of the show, right? No matter how many times life knocks you down, you get back up, get back in the race. You can do it too, whatever you're going through. It's all temporary. It's Bart and Han. Bart will be back tomorrow, everybody. So Han Solo, just a couple of days here this week, and why not? We just have some fun with it. Playing some Sinatra and loving every minute of it. But just wanted to get – I want to get Peter Rosenberg fired up for his show today, the K-Show coming up top of the hour. You know, he's a big Celtics fan. They were down 0-3, about to get swept, about to get embarrassingly swept out of the series. They were being called out, soft, all this stuff. They are trying their best to use a rallying cry, and they are trying to conjure the spirit of the 2004 Red Sox, who, as you know, everybody knows here in New York, came back on the Yankees to win that series and win their first World Series in forever. And break the curse of the Bambino. So they're suggesting that they can do it too. No team in the NBA has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit. So I just want Peter to believe. I want him to believe they can. Freddie in Brooklyn, can they?
Hello?
Freddie.
Hello.
Yes, how are you?
How are you, sir? All right. I think the Celtics have a very good chance of coming back and winning the series. Because I think on paper, they're a better team than the Heat. It's quite unlike the Lakers series, where the Lakers were playing a better team
than
the Nuggets. Also, I want to revisit this Carmelo issue a little bit. Do you think he's going into the Hall of Fame as a Nugget or as a Knick?
Well, it's different than in baseball, where they have you pick a hat and all that stuff. Because in basketball, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame. So you don't go in as a play, like with a team. Like you, like, because there are college players in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and his college career counts in this whole thing, right? So honestly, he would just go in as Carmelo Anthony, basketball player. But how is he known? How is he remembered? That's fair. Like, what photo, if you were putting up a photo, in his, for his Hall of Fame? Which picture are you using? That I think is a fair question to ask, Freddie. And I appreciate it. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you had another question. Like, I think when you think of Melo in New York, you're going to think of the Knicks version of him. But the Denver version of him was the better player. Like, he was, again, younger player, was very dynamic, very explosive, that he took them to a conference finals when toe-to-toe with Kobe. And so if you're going to remember him the entirety of his career, I would think that the Denver Nuggets version of him is the one that in the Hall of Fame you would say that's the guy. But he did score 62 points and led the league in scoring as a Knick. So is that the guy? Or is the guy in the Olympic uniform the guy? Olympics Melo. It's a pretty good one. Or is the guy that led Syracuse to a national championship the guy? There's different versions of him. And so we'll see. But one thing that's indisputable is that he's going to the Hall of Fame. First ballot. He's in. You can't dispute any of that. Top 10 scorer in all time in NBA history and a national champion, Olympic champion, all that stuff. So we started the show off with the squirrel running along the outfield wall in Yankee Stadium and how panicked the fans were just seeing it. And, you know, I have this story about a hawk that was hovering around my daughter when she was a toddler at a playground. And a man who just walked by, and I didn't see the hawk, pointed to it. And I freaked out, and I started, like, you know, waving at the hawk. I grabbed my daughter and all that stuff. And so while I wanted to thank the man for telling me that this hawk was there, I turned, and there was no man. It's not a joke. I don't know who that man was, but he disappeared in thin air. Just like this show. K-Show next.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.